This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Much. You've made a contribution to your community that is appreciated. It will go a long way to bringing you the great radio you've come to enjoy. Before you know it, your membership envelope will arrive in the mail. Don't forget to pay your pledge. The great feeling you get when you support KPFT feels even better once you drop that check in the mail. And if you missed your chance to join and support the news, music, and other great programming you hear each day, there's still time. Join online kpft.org and do your part, or call 713-526-4000 to make a pledge. Thanks again for your support. You do make a difference. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Inay.
Brian Lavinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, David Elliott will be calling in from Washington, D.C. to update us on national issues, including Don't Ask, Don't Tell. In news wrap, President Barack Obama has issued an official LGBT Pride Month proclamation and a memo outlining the benefits he ordered last year for the partners and children of lesbi gay federal workers, while Dutch researchers say they may have discovered evidence that gaydar actually exists. Following news wrap, we have City Council member Wanda Adams to talk about issues in District D, which includes Montrose. At the top of the second hour, Craig Farrell, the chairman of GCAM, will be here. GCAM is the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgendered History, Inc. Many of us consider our pets to be like children to us, and one of our community's most outspoken volunteers for pets will be here to discuss his efforts working with the Bureau of Animal Regulation and Care in Houston, otherwise known as BARC. Yeah, B-A-R-C. At 10:40 this evening, we have our feature segments from This Way Out, which tonight looks at a controversial new McDonald's commercial which aired in France and has gone viral on the web. I'll give you a hint. The teenager in the commercial is gay, and his father, whom he is having dinner with at McDonald's, is oblivious. And we have audio file with J.D. Doyle. And all that's tonight on Queer Voices.
Well, and I have to wish everybody a happy Pride Month and a happy hurricane season.
Happy hurricane season.
Yes. Now, yes. Does one mean the other? I don't know.
Something like that.
Well, it is Pride Month, and we're going to be focusing on some Pride issues this month, as we usually do in June. Of course, the parade happens at the end of the month, and we're trying to get somebody on from Pride to talk about all the different things that are going on that's new and exciting. And we're working on that among some of the other Pride events. There isn't quite as many as there was in the past, but right now, probably the best guide for that is Outsmart, which is out, outsmartmagazine.com. And I understand that also a lot of those things will be listed in the new Montrose Gem. That's out now.
That's out now. It's out now, and the Outsmart listing is very comprehensive. There's something to do every night, I think.
So, and we have David Elliott on the line, and he missed last month, so he's going to make up for it this month, aren't you, David?
Well, you betcha, Jack, and how are you doing tonight?
Oh.
And how is everybody out in Queer Voices land?
We're doing wonderful.
Yes, we are. This is Jennifer Renee, so you'll know.
Well, thank you, Jennifer, for telling me that you're in studio because, you know, I can't see y'all.
You can't?
No, I can hear you, but I can't see you.
Oh. Well, what's the news for this month?
Well, let's talk about tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow is what some people in the political world are referring to as Super Tuesday.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
and
it is.
And they're calling it that because 12 states are having their primary elections, or in some cases their runoff elections. And I'm not going to talk about all 12 states because, I'll be frank with you, some of those elections are kind of boring. But I do want to talk to you about 1, 2, 3, and 4 of races that are going on, because there are a couple of important races that anybody who follows politics, as I do, and you do, Jennifer and Jack does, want to keep an eye on. And we start with Arkansas. Tomorrow in Arkansas, a progressive candidate by the name of Mike Halter, excuse me, that's Bill Halter, he's the lieutenant governor of Arkansas, is running a campaign to upset incumbent U.S. Senator Blanche Lincoln. Progressives have been all over this race, have been totally pushing Halter's candidacy, pumping money into the state, making phone calls, doing canvassing, and it looks like the progressive in the race, Halter, is just barely going to be able to upset the incumbent United States Senator Blanche Lincoln.
Wow.
That's the big, big headline.
It certainly is.
Yes. Now, then we go to Nevada. Nevada has a really interesting primary where three Republicans are competing to go against a Nevada senator and majority leader, Harry Reid. And for a while, it looked like Harry Reid was really, really endangered. But then something very strange happened. The Tea Party candidate surged to the very front of the Republican primary, and she's now in first place. We are expecting her to win tomorrow. Her name is Sharon Angle, and she believes in abolishing Social Security, abolishing the Department of Education, requiring the United States to withdraw from the United Nations, and she also believes in I've lost my list here. Going to the gold standard. I don't know what the heck that means.
It sounds like the John Birch Society.
Thank you. You just reminded me of my fourth thing. She believes that Barack Obama was not born in the United States.
Oh, and she's a birther.
She's a birther. Right. So this takes us to South Carolina. South Carolina, which has been described by some people as being too small to be a republic, but too large to be an insane asylum. And we have the front runner for governor, who is a woman by the name of...
Do you want
now
a drum
I'm losing
roll?
It.
Do you want a drum roll while we wait?
my notes are all over the place.
But just go ahead. Tell us about her while you try to find it.
State Representative Nikki Haley. She was in a very, very competitive race. And then two of her detractors, two people who were going against her, accused her of being involved in extramarital affairs.
With them?
No, with aides to them.
Oh, okay.
So then Sarah Palin comes in, endorses her. She starts fighting back. This whole bad thing ensues. And after the allegations were made that she had been involved in these extramarital affairs, she starts rising in the polls. And now it looks like she's going to win tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. It's very strange. And then I'll just sum up with California. California is having a mega primary. People spending millions and millions and millions of dollars running for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate, for Republican nomination for governor. And I won't even go into that races, those races, but I will say that a woman who might possibly win the nomination for Republican nominee for California Secretary of State is another birther, somebody who doesn't think that Barack Obama was born in the United States, and the other Republicans are having nothing to do with her whatsoever. So that's going to be a major embarrassment for the Republicans in California. And we're kind of seeing this all across the country. We just saw it with the nomination of the Kentucky Republican Ron Paul, who
Rand
don't know
Paul.
Very well.
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul, because he is the son of Congressman Ron Paul of Southeast Texas. And he's been making some rather outrageous statements. So, hello, folks. It's election time. Now, I want to say one thing as we look toward November, because a lot of people have been wondering, is this going to be an Armageddon for Democrats in November? Is this going to be 1994, you know, back again? Way back in 1994, Bill Clinton had been elected just 2 years before, and Republicans went on to capture 54 seats in the United States Congress. They took control of both the House and the Senate. Are we looking at a repeat of that? I don't think we are, and here's why. We've been doing a whole lot of polling, and the Democratic Party brand has been declining.
Yes.
In the polls. The Republican Party brand, which has been about 20 to 30 points below the Democratic Party brand, has been staying even. In other words, even as the Democrats decline, the Republicans have not been able to gain even 1 point.
Okay.
And that's what's interesting.
Yeah.
The Democrats are going to lose some seats. Definitely. Probably in the area of, 20 to 25 seats. They would have to lose about a 39 to lose the House of Representatives. But the Republicans just aren't coming up that much. So basically, it's not going to be what we call a wave election. It's going to be a status quo election with the Democrats taking some hits.
Okay.
So what's going to happen in the Senate?
Well, in the Senate right now, if you count the two independent folks, Lieberman and Bernie Sanders, the Democrats have a majority of 59 to 41. I expect that our majority will be cut exactly in half. Probably we will end up 54-46 or 55-45. You know, once you include the independent canvassers,
right.
Lieberman and Sanders.
Do you think the Democrats are going to take Pennsylvania?
Interesting question. Where Congressman Sestak just defeated Senator Spector
right.
in the Democratic primary. And so now we have a fascinating, wrap-up of Sestak against a very conservative Republican, Pat Toomey. Pennsylvania, marginally, is a blue state. I think it's going to be a hard-fought Senate race. In fact, it could be the hardest-fought Senate race in the entire country. But
even more than Nevada?
Even more than Nevada, especially, Jennifer, if the Republicans nominate the Tea Party person, Jennifer Engels.
Excuse me, I think that's
Shannon Engels. Oh, I'm getting my first names all confused.
Okay.
No, Sharon Engel. Sharon Engel.
Okay. That's really interesting. Okay. Well, and what defeated Specter in Pennsylvania was they kept reminding him, people about how he voted in the past, which was he voted as a Republican.
Well, Jack, that's totally correct. Democrats...
That was a brilliant campaign.
Yeah. Democrats will no longer permit corporatocrats or Republicans to prevail in Democratic primaries. And we saw that in Pennsylvania. We're about to see that tomorrow in Arkansas. And folks, I'm gonna go right out on a limb here. I'm gonna go right out on a limb and say that Bill Halter is going to achieve a stunning upset against incumbent United States Senator Blanche Lincoln in tomorrow night's Democratic primary in Arkansas. Polls close there at 7:30 Central Time. Keep an eye on it.
Okay. Now, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell vote, which was rather interesting, that here in southeastern Texas, that we had a Democrat voted against it, which was Gene Green, and we had a Republican vote for it, which was Ron Paul, to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah, Jack, I cannot even figure that out. I can say that I think that a Don't Ask, Don't Tell will be passed by September. I think it's going to go through that quickly, but you know they're going to pass the law, but they're going to make it so that the military has like a year or two
to implement it.
It's, you know, that's where it gets kind of confusing.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, people, give us a break. Why don't you, you know, do this already? So, you know, it's the same thing as ENDA, you know, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. We are definitely going to get it. It's just going to take us a little bit longer than we thought, and it's just sort of maddening.
Now, with the oil spill in the Gulf, and it seems like it's going on forever, and definitely this is something inherited from the last administration, but on the other hand, probably something should have been done with the agency that oversaw it in the last year and a half. Who do you think is going to get the blame for that?
Well, you know, I'm...
Besides
really
the company.
Well, I mean, I'm happy to see that the Obama administration is breaking up, you know, MMS, which is the, you know...
Yes.
You know, part of Department of Interior that has to oversee this thing.
And by the way, there was a wonderful article in today's Chronicle on the front page, I think it was today or maybe it was over the weekend, about how that agency just basically didn't do its job. It didn't even go out to, and you may have read that or it may have been picked up by the AP, that, you know, a lot of their regulation was done in their office. What regulation they did do.
Well, and the agency was so corrupt.
Yes.
With the what they did to and with the industry, you know, the nice trips, the golf, you know, that they paid for, the sex parties. I mean, the incredible filling out
of the forms.
Yeah, the incredible corruption. And now look what's happening in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, I don't even know how to answer your question. I am stunned beyond belief at how we let people drill 5,000 feet into the ocean who don't know what to do when their well breaks. I don't even know how to address that, Jack. I'm totally ill prepared and incompetent at addressing that. That's how upset and angry I am. Really.
I understand. So as we move past this election season, you still think that we're still going to be able to move the agenda progressively?
You know, Jack, there's a major conference going on in Washington, D.C. today and tomorrow and on Wednesday. You know, it's being put on by a group called Center for America's Future. And, you know, people were all over that conference today. You know, 3,000 or 4,000 people were there. And we're not happy.
Right. I understand.
We helped elect Barack Obama president. And, you know, we're dealing with the ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're dealing with a slow pace in repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We're dealing with a not passing serious legislation to address our economic crisis. We're dealing with, you know, the spill of the Gulf of Mexico. We're dealing with just this and that and everything. Obama is not standing up as a progressive. He's standing up as a centrist. So, Jack, I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, we're all working towards the same thing. Those of us who are active and wanting to see this country get better. And a lot of us, as you know, we all worked really hard, even here in Texas. I mean, the fact that the city of Houston voted for Obama, which probably they have, you know, we haven't done in almost a generation, which was an incredible thing. There are states that voted for him that haven't done in a long time, voted for the progressive candidate. And, you know, I guess we were all hoping for more, but we also, you know, knew that it was going to be tough for him to do it, because not only on the Republican side, but a lot of the Democrats are not acting like they won the election.
Well, you know, Jack, I want to quote right here Arianna Huffington. It's clear that hope is not enough. We need hope 2.0.
That's really good, David. That's really good. Well, David, go ahead.
And Jack, I just want to say one more thing. Up here in D.C., we know that Texas Democrats have a chance of winning the governor's race in November. We know that there's a chance that Perry might lose, especially when you consider the incredibly, incredibly stupid comment that Perry made a couple of weeks ago with regard to the oil spill. You know, something about, you know, it's God's will that sometimes these things happen. So don't lose hope. Don't lose hope. We are keeping an eye on y'all from up here, and we know things are changing down in Texas. Don't lose hope.
And we're not. We're doing our part to make things happen.
As Harvey Milk says, we can never lose hope, but we also have to act upon it. David, thank you very much again for joining us, and tell us what you do for your day job.
Well, you know, Jack, for the last 25 days, I've been on a first-degree murder jury trial.
Oh, lucky so you.
Yeah, it's taken my life up, and it's been hard to get anything else done. But
you want your life back.
Yeah, I want my life back. Oh, my God. But for my day job, I'm the communications director for U.S. Action, and you can find us on the web at usaction.org.
Great. David, thank you very much for joining us. You're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 5th, 2010. A committee of the United Nations Economic and Social Council, known by the acronym ECOSOC, has rejected the application for non-governmental organization consultative status by the U.S.-based IGLHRC, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission. The Reuters news agency reported that the Egyptian delegation led a push to prevent the committee from voting this week on IGLHRC's bid, which was first submitted 3 years ago. Egypt was joined by several other nations that have been criticized by Western rights groups for abusing LGBT people, thereby leaving the application in limbo, the report said. The ECOSOC NGO committee has 19 members, including representatives of the United States and Britain, who supported IGLHRC's application. Joining Egypt in opposition were Angola, Burundi, China, Qatar, Pakistan, Russia, and Sudan, while Turkey abstained. Eagle Herc Executive Director Carrie Allen Johnson said in a statement that the rejection was a clear case of discrimination against an organization because it defends the human rights of LGBT people around the world and promotes non-discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. According to Reuters, despite the committee vote, the U.S. and European delegates may still be able to push the full U.N. Economic and Social Council to accredit Eagle Herc.
The struggle for LGBT rights continues to make news in Africa. Stoked by inflammatory media reports about gay parties and marriages, at least 1,000 people, mostly young Muslims, held a first-ever anti-gay rally in Ghana this week. The protesters, many carrying handwritten signs and singing Muslim songs, braved drenching rain to march against homosexuality through the main streets of Sekondi Takoradi, the twin city capital of the country's western region. Saeed Ahmed, one of the leaders of the demonstration, told local media that Ghana will suffer more than the experience of Sodom and Gomorrah should we embrace this practice in this country. The protesters delivered a petition to Western Regional Minister Paul Evans Aidu, demanding specific laws in Ghana to criminalize homosexuality. A review of the country's constitution is currently underway. Some have called on the government to enact Islamic Sharia law in Ghana. Aidu assured the demonstrators that steps would be taken to address their concerns. Protest leaders vowed to organize a nationwide demonstration if the government fails to act in the next 2 months.
Tawangi Chimbalanga and Stephen Mongeza, the queer Malawi couple who received a presidential pardon on May 29th after being sentenced to 14 years hard labor for sodomy, made their first public appearance this week at a brief news conference in the Southern African country's administrative capital of Lilongwe. In a prepared statement, they called President Bingu wa Mutharika considerate and tolerant and encouraged his leadership in respecting human rights and economic prosperity. They also asked the media and the general public to respect their privacy. Their pardon followed a meeting between Mutharika and United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. The couple's arrest last December, shortly after holding a public engagement party, was headlined as an illegal gay marriage, and they were prosecuted for unnatural acts between males. But it has since been reported that Chimbalanga actually identifies as a trans person. Gift Trepence of the LGBT rights group Center for the Development of People, which paid the couple's legal fees, said they were trying to find jobs for Chimbalanga and Mongeza. At least one of them has talked about seeking asylum abroad. And far from advancing queer rights, President Mutharika said this week that the couple would be prosecuted again if they violate Malawi's harsh anti-gay statutes. He called their engagement party satanic because they committed a crime against our culture, against our religion, and against our laws. But he said he pardoned them because to err is human and to forgive is divine.
A man and a trans woman, described as his gay marriage partner, were arrested in Pakistan this week. Police stormed a party they were attending in Peshawar and arrested 43 dancing guests. 42-year-old Malik Muhammad Iqbal was charged with attempting to wed the 19-year-old, identified only as Rani, who was reportedly born a man but lives as a woman. The pair said that Iqbal was merely a guest at Rani's birthday party. Pakistani authorities claim to have photographs and a wedding dress that prove a ceremony had been planned. Attempting to marry someone of the same gender is illegal in Pakistan. A police officer told CNN that this is a psychological disease when men are attracted to men and not attracted to women. He said the two would be charged with sodomy. Pakistani human rights groups say about 400,000 men live as women in the conservative, mostly Muslim South Asian nation, where they're known as Khusra. After decades of discrimination, Pakistan's Supreme Court recognized Khusras as a distinct minority last year. But like hijras in India, they continue to be treated as outcasts, and many perform as dancers or beg on the streets to survive. According to CNN, Rani and Iqbal were taunted at their first court hearing. Wherever they went, cameras followed and people booed. They each face up to 10 years behind bars.
Elsewhere, U.S. President Barack Obama declared June to be Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month in an official proclamation released by the White House on May 28th. As we recognize the immeasurable contributions of LGBT Americans, the proclamation reads in part, We renew our commitment to the struggle for equal rights for LGBT Americans and to ending prejudice and injustice wherever it exists. Our nation draws its strength from our diversity, with each of us contributing to the greater whole. By affirming these rights and values, each American benefits from the further advancement of liberty and justice for all. Obama also issued a presidential memo this week outlining certain available benefits that federal agencies will now be required to provide to same-gender partners of federal workers and their families. The memo builds upon a directive Obama issued last June instructing federal agencies to determine which benefits could be offered despite the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, the Clinton-era law that prohibits federal recognition of same-gender unions. Obama noted that this week's memo requires the extension to the partners and children of lesbian and gay federal workers a number of meaningful benefits, from family assistance services to hardship transfers to relocation expenses. The Office of Personnel Management, which oversees the federal government's almost 2 million employees, is expected to issue specific guidelines in the next few weeks.
But repeal of another Clinton-era law, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the U.S. policy requiring gay and lesbian military personnel to stay in the closet, is not happening fast enough for many queer advocates. A key Senate committee and the full House of Representatives moved the process forward last week, but the policy won't be history until the full Senate votes for repeal. The Pentagon completes a review of how it will be implemented, due in December, and the Defense Secretary, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the President sign off on it, followed by a 60-day waiting period. At best, Don't Ask, Don't Tell won't be a bad memory until at least February or March 2011. Lieutenant Dan Choi and Captain Jim Petrangelo, two outspoken critics of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, began a hunger strike on May 27th to protest what they called an unacceptable delay in eliminating the policy. Choi is a West Point graduate, Iraq War veteran, and Arab linguist who is currently serving in the National Guard. His discharge proceedings began following his coming out on MSNBC's Rachel Maddow show last year. Petrangelo is an Army veteran who was discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell in 2004. Choi announced that they were ending their week-long hunger strike on June 2nd because many supporters had expressed concerns for their health. His statement said in part that, "Our quest to end the discharges, stop the insulting study, and institute a non-discrimination policy is not over." He noted that he and Petrangelo had learned more about the proper medical safeguards they need to take and said they may begin another hunger strike sometime soon.
In other news, gay flight attendants at Dutch airline KLM had asked management to be excused from flying to Iran because the country is viewed as one of the world's most dangerous places for LGBT people, particularly for flight attendants whose work requires them to spend the night. According to a Radio Netherlands Worldwide report, KLM has already allowed a number of stewardesses not to serve on flights to Iran because unpleasant things happen to them there. But the company says it cannot make any more exceptions. No further changes will be made unless it becomes really unsafe for personnel. Female flight attendants already put on headscarves when their planes land in Iran.
And finally, in another story from the Netherlands, a small study by Dutch scientists suggests that gaydar, the so-called sixth sense that gay people use to identify each other, might actually exist. According to the researchers, gay people have better attention to detail than their heterosexual counterparts. They surveyed 42 lesbian, gay, and heterosexual men and women, asking them to describe photos of large squares and rectangles filled with smaller squares or rectangles. Heterosexual men and women replied faster, but were more likely to incorrectly identify the smaller shapes. Gay and lesbian participants took more time to respond, but were more accurate. Dr. Lorenza Calzado of Leiden University told reporters that this perceptual skill allows homosexuals to recognize other gay people faster, and we think it's because they are much more analytic than heterosexuals. Researchers are theorizing that this makes gay people better at picking out small clues to the sexual orientation of others. Whatever the scientific reason, many gay people can cite plenty of personal experience to suggest that gaydar is, in fact, a reality.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 5, 2010, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee. We're here in the studio. We have a special guest this evening, the representative of on City Council for the Montrose. Actually, District D goes from Montrose to Missouri City, probably, if not the most diverse district, one of them. Was it 140-something?
144
square miles. We have District D City Council member, the Honorable Wanda Adams. Welcome.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you so much for having me on the show this evening. I really appreciate you and Jack Walensky for everything that you continue to do in the community. And I'm just happy to be here, and I thank you for inviting me.
Well, what's going on in District D?
Oh, man. First of all, I just want to thank, I know Mayor Parker is listening. I just left from her. She was just with me at a community town hall in Fort Bend County addressing issues that's related to District D as a whole. And, of course, the big things that's current in District D right now is looking at our budget. I know a lot of council members right now probably at home resting at this moment because we have a long day tomorrow. So District D, a lot of exciting things that are going on in the community, of course, with everyone else, with street infrastructure, libraries, new libraries that's going on in the community. So we're doing a lot of things in the district. So I take really great pride in representing the district, and just found out the other day, I just came back from Little Rock, Arkansas from a neighborhoods conference, and the people was proud about Arkansas. Yes, we're, you know, 190 plus thousand people in Arkansas, and I told the mayor, I said, you can actually sit district, you can sit Arkansas in District D, and they was really excited about that. So I'm really to know that I represent this community, and I'm really excited about it.
That's about, 200,000, 200
quarter? About 250, a little bit over 250, and it's growing every day.
Oh, yeah. Well, I understand. I don't know whether it'll be this go around or the next year, the adding two new districts.
Actually, right now, we looked at the mayor sent over the timeline recently, and right now, of course, we're waiting on the final census numbers to come out at the end of the year. And next year, we'll look at it, and hopefully, well, it will be on the ballot for next year, and they'll get together and put a committee together to look at how we're going to look at those particular lines that are being drawn, and we'll see what the outcome is going to be.
Okay. I know over the last couple of weeks there's been a bit of a controversy that came up in about District D and about a vote or non-vote. And there's a lot of people that weren't involved. They're just out there and just didn't notice. What was the issue about?
Well, one of the issues that came up, you know, within city government, there's a lot of issues that come before council members. You have nine district council members, and you have five at-large council members. And whenever you're dealing with a particular district issue that may come before council on a certain agenda, especially if it falls in a presiding district, or we usually yield respect to the district council member to ask, you know, basically what's their pleasure of their particular issue. And this particular issue was dealing with Marja House, which is a home that's in the Pleasantville community that's located in District B. And Marja House is a home that actually houses people who have mental disabilities. Some are dual diagnosed, and some of her residents are people who have been infected with HIV or AIDS, and so she has a home to provide a better quality of life for those constituents so they can have a safe place to live. And this particular issue came up before council prior to the vote on the 19th, to whereas to fund about $199,000 for HIV funding for this particular house. But the particular issue came about was the council member defending the area of Pleasantville. And one of the things that I take pride in is listening to community leaders and community leaders of the super neighborhood and the civic clubs, and came before council and asked council to not support the funding of Marja House because of violation of their deed restrictions. And if you allow one type of halfway house or rehab house to come into your community, then you're opening up many doors for other rehab homes coming in. And they just was looking at it as a deed restriction violation, that the home operating as a business, and according to their deed restriction, you don't supposed to have businesses in your community. Well, the community came up in large numbers, and we received phone calls and letters, you know, asking us, please don't support, help us protect our deed restriction. As you know, Jennifer, I am the chair of the Neighborhood Protection and Quality of Life Committee. Mm-hmm. And so in this particular committee, we talk about deed restrictions. What do we do? How do we get to protect, you know, communities? And so when the community just came forward and they was like, we are our leaders in the community. We're a civic club presidents. We're a super neighborhood, and we're asking you, please do not support. Help us protect our deed restrictions in our community. And so with that being on both sides, I just heard the issues of the community, because in District D on the other side, we're dealing with similar, not per se the funding, but we're dealing with similar issues when it comes to protecting deed restrictions. And so and I just chose not to participate in the vote anyway.
Now wasn't the house already there?
The house was already
there. So this wasn't about not having the house there. It was about just the funding for it?
Well, I don't know if it was per se for the funding. I don't think it was for the funding, because we did address that issue, and it was actually for the quality. They just didn't want the house there, period. They wanted the house gone.
Well, and, but it wasn't going to happen because it's already there.
Well, the house is already there, and that was the issue that we discussed with them about, is, you know, coming to city government wasn't the way to go about it. You have to go and go after. If it's a licensed facility, you have to go a different way to protest against a particular building, any building, not just that particular one that's in that community. It's any building or anyone that feels that they have any operation of any businesses in their community whatsoever. If the community feels that it's a violation of their deed restrictions, the community has every right to ask city government, you know, this is a violation of our deed restrictions. We don't want the house. We don't want the rehab house here. We don't want the halfway house here. And I publicly asked them, did this have anything to do with the funding? They say, no, it did not. This is for us protecting the quality of life of our neighborhoods, of not having businesses in the district. And so there's a lot of council members that sometimes that was abstained from voting. And this was just one of the positions that I took and on that. And I don't know how long you probably been in Montrose. I'm sure a very long time. I don't know if you remember Beecher Wilson on Norfolk Street. Beecher Wilson was a project that I worked for.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And working at the Housing Authority at the time, and a lot of funding came through the Housing Authority where I had to fund Beecher Wilson. And so that's where my career started. And that's when I got acclimated about the importance of HOPWA funding. And it's so important. Within the last 3 years, we've have funded $27 million of HOPWA funds in the district, which about 15,000 people will actually be able to benefit from the HOPWA funds in the district. This particular day, just 199,000, it passed. If I would have known that the vote would have made a difference, if it was close, I probably wouldn't have abstained. But due to that, I have already counted the votes before I stepped out, and just wanted to make sure that to support the community, because they have a right to stand up and say yes, but then also support the council member to saying yes, you have a right to fight for your constituents. So that was just a decision that I made. It didn't have anything to do with the funding for the HOPWA funds at all, because I'm a strong advocate for HIV awareness and education in the community. I have a long-standing history over 20-something years dealing with different issues when it comes to mental illness, any type of disability, HIV and AIDS funding. So this is just a decision. It didn't have anything to do with HIV or anything like that. It just did a decision of hearing the community saying, please let us be able to stand up for the fighting of the quality of life for our neighborhoods. And that is exactly what it boiled down to, out of respect for those civic leaders asking us, and any community that will come up and ask us to support issues that helps them build the quality of life to attract economic bases in their community. You know, a district council member, we're just in a hard seat sometimes, and we just have to feel like what we are doing best. And at that time, I just decided not to participate.
And I understand that. I hear what you're saying about deed restriction, but this didn't have to do with deed restriction. The vote wasn't about deed restrictions. It was about funding mm-hmm. for AIDS in this house that's already there.
In Pleasantville.
In Pleasantville. And you had already given them the information mm-hmm. concerning how to deal with if they don't want it there, as any citizen would have there. I guess what I'm understanding you're saying, the controversy came when you got up and left.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you just mentioned a moment ago about, you know, you got a hard seat to sit in sometimes. Mm-hmm. I guess the problem I'm hearing was that was the fact that you abstained. But you didn't stay there and abstain. You sort of...
We'll step out the room to not to participate. That is basically the same. And it's just not me. We have a lot of elected officials sometimes when a decision come out. And sometimes it's just because this issue was I don't want to say a hot issue or issue that was before the forefront of the community. But there are several council members that step out on a lot of issues concerning this. You have, so I mean, it just that just the respect that some council members that we have. And one of the things that I want to take pride in is knowing that there are some tough decisions that must be made, and sometimes you just the first time I've ever stepped out on a particular vote concerning the issue, but you're hearing the community on both sides, and that is one of the reasons why I just, you know, chose not to participate in that particular vote. And again, I have to reiterate, it didn't mean a no vote nor a yes vote. It just didn't participate in the actual funding for this particular property of the Marger House. But it didn't have anything to do with whether or not it was for HIV and AIDS because of the monies that we have already given to the district concerning HOPWA funding is enormous. And I've never voted no on a particular funding for HOPWA funds. And I will continue to support it because in that case, everything that I've done in the last 20 years of my career dealing with homeless population, dealing with people who have HIV and AIDS, my education would be for naught. And so that was one of the things that I take pride in because of this issue in the HOPWA funding. And so we just want to make sure that we would be able to...
What I'm hearing is that even with all the controversy that came up and all the circumstance came up, if the vote came up tomorrow, you would still step out.
If the vote came, just happily, I don't have to deal with that tomorrow.
I know,
so
I know that, but there might be another one come up.
If it was the same, and knowing that if it was like right now, if it was tomorrow, and we had like 8 weeks or 5 weeks to dialogue about what has happened, I'm sure a lot of votes would be different on tomorrow, not just mine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess one of the other statements, the things that came out, controversy begats controversy, and I know that the last... council meeting, there was that they had some public conversation, and I know that was because I did see the video. It was rather upsetting, and it was. Would you want to say something about where that was on that?
Well, one thing I guess, and a lot of people. First of all, I just want to thank various community leaders for their tremendous support. I think I didn't know, to be honest with you, where it was coming. I didn't know it was coming. And one of the things that I could say that was most hurtful to me is because of individuals where I didn't receive a phone call and asked, why did I make my decision the way that I did? Based on representatives. And, you know, I don't want to say any names or anything like that, but that was the most hurtful, and just knowing how it was brought, a phone call not received from certain individuals to address the issue, and accusation that was made about certain things about my office, and knowing that I have a history of they could just look and see who I've hired in the past. And I didn't think that it was just the way it was brought. And I felt that if I would have known about it, or I would have been given heads up about it as being the elected official, that I think that's the whole issue, because I didn't know. Didn't know it was coming. No one called my office. And I think that was the emotion about it being caught off guard. We know who's coming before council.
Yes.
And we can see what the issue is. We don't know how it's going to be brought. And so I think that was the issue that was brought forward, and the person who brought it, because the person who brought it was part of my family. And my work family, a part of my family that who I adore, still do. Nothing changes. This doesn't change anything on how I feel or how I react. I would care for the people the same way I did yesterday. I still do it today. Because like somebody told me, it's politics. Yes, it's politics. So if it's politics, there's a respect of politics. And it's going to be some things that some people don't like. And that's what it's called. That's why it's called politics. And so, but I think when you have a member of your family that you consider a member of your family do something that you don't know is being done, that right there is where the emotions and the hurt come in at.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think you were blindsided then?
I have no idea. If you could answer that for me, I really would appreciate it.
Oh, I'm asking you the question.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
So I'm hearing that no one from the anybody that watches the tape of it, the videotape, I would see, it was from the GLBT, president of the GLBT political caucus that came up and spoke. So no one from the GLBT community spoke to you prior to
that? Well, what I'm learning, Jennifer, and I have learned a lot in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I've had phone calls that said, I'm part of the GLBT community, but I'm not a part of the caucus. And my voice is this. And a lot of positive phone calls and emails that we received in our office saying, that's not us. And we love you, we support you, but that's not us. So I'm still learning. I'm learning who's who. Who represents who speak for who, and I have to respect the entire GLBT community, because when I'm hearing that one voice doesn't represent everyone, and when it comes to leadership and respect for leadership, I respect the leadership that's there, but the only thing that I wish that someone would have called and informed me what was coming, so I could have been either better prepared, that it wouldn't been so like caught off like, huh, you know what, and you know, versus this is what's coming, be prepared, and be ready. And then offense to anyone that's in leadership, because I respect everyone that's in leadership, because that's what it is. Yeah. It's the, you know, the political caucus, and yeah, it's, and you have to be able to stand on your issues that you believe in, and I think that's what the leader was doing. But it was just the way how it was done, that if I would have been made aware of it, I think it would have been done a little bit better.
Gone down a little easier, you think?
Haven't heard. We received a lot of positiveness from it, and you didn't hear from me when it happened. I kept quiet because I was respecting everyone across the board, not to keep hashing it out, to let it come, let it go, and respect my decision just the way I respect, you know, various issues from across the district as a whole, you know, from, you know, River Oaks to Fort Bend County. You know, you have to be able to respect various issues and concerns of all the constituents of the community. And I think that, you know, hey, it's like you just learn a political game, and this is just one of them, and being able but just to respect each other that sits around that that dais.
Now, one of the things that was brought up was, and you know, it was accusation, you know, there's so many people and so many access to media, you know, from internet to whatever. There was a question concerning your employment in your office,
mm-hmm,
that you didn't have, other than the one we spoke of that no longer works for you, haven't hired anyone from the GLBT community,
mm-hmm,
and that for some reason that shows a bias on your part. Would you address that?
Well, let's talk about it. Have anything to do with GLBT, race, or gender. Everyone hire the best qualified individual for the office.
Okay, so no one showed up with the right credentials to apply?
Well, I prefer
you may get 50 after this.
Yeah, I mean,
broadcast.
When you do a search, you just hire the best qualified person. So when you go across the board, you can't just say bias in my office. Let's look across the board of all the offices. So we can't just single me out. You have to single everybody out, and just don't look at gender, or look across the board when it comes to people hiring. And I don't think that no one should have the say to say who wants hires, because if you look at many offices, you can look that there's somebody missing from every office that don't look like me.
I understand that, but unfortunately, that was the accusation towards you. So I want to give you the opportunity to answer that question.
I just
want
to say it's just because I've hired, and it's just that we just hired the best qualified candidate. Some people referred some candidates to the office that it wasn't whether or not if they were GLBT, because sometimes, be honest with you, I don't know. We just hire the best qualified individual that's there. And
they don't put on their application, "I'm gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender." You don't have that in your office? You don't have the GLB and T on there?
Sounds like a bologna, lettuce, and tomato sandwich to me.
Okay. just checking.
Yeah, we're open. We don't have any biases. And if anyone knows me and you've gotten to know me over the past 3 years and just not in the Montrose community for many years, if you know me, if they believe the emails or believe accusations, there's no way I can defend against that. I could just be who I am, be who I have represented in the last 2.5 years, and I thank you for that, because it was because of you that you challenged me to learn the community. You told me don't miss a meeting in a year, and I attended anything that came up because at your request, and to make sure that you learn and you get acclimated and you see. And I just have a respect for people and a heart for people, period. And it emails, they came out, but come to find out it wasn't anything to the emails matter of fact, and I can just tell you now, we have not received not one phone call after that email came out in my office. Matter of fact, no, someone did call and asked me why did I vote, and that was it. No phone calls, no emails, nothing.
Interesting.
Nothing.
Interesting.
No emails, no phone calls, anything from the email. And so, hey, that spoke a lot. That no one, besides having personal relationships like what you and I have, and we've had our conversation off the phone, but besides personal relationships as the constituents, because people say we respect the decision that you made, and sometimes you put in a hot position and you have to do what you feel that is best, and that's what leaders, that's what they do. You're not going to do what's popular all the time, but you have to do what's best that you feel for you, and you're supposed to let your track record speak for itself.
And to clarify something, to what you said, I was president of the GLBT political caucus, and you were planning on running and talking about running, and then did run. I gave you the same advice I've given every other candidate that approached me. It says, come to the meetings, get to know the community, stay around, listen, and ask questions.
And I appreciate you for doing that.
I want to make sure that that's clear on that. I know that there's some issues concerning other GLBT-ish issues that have come up before in the last, since December or January of 2008, What is it? Can you recall any of those? Been in support of the... Because one of your statements was, I've always voted in support of the GLBT community.
One of the things that we're dealing with right now, and I got invited to the new Transgender Community Center that I think opened about 3 weeks ago, maybe?
Yes.
Like a month ago?
Yes.
And I was there, and I did the ribbon cutting. And we all had
May 2nd.
Was it May 2nd? Okay. It was a Sunday, that I could tell you. It was
May
a Sunday.
3rd.
It was hot. It was a Sunday. And I had the opportunity to meet, I think it was about an hour, with some of the transgender community, and I stayed and I listened. It was my first time meeting some of the faces that I saw that day. And their biggest concern was transgender homeless youth. And they, told me stories and about what's going on. And I left them assuring that we'll have a meeting with a particular homeless shelter in the community and to deal with those particular issues. And what we do, we have a meeting coming up this Friday at this particular facility, and to talk about homeless transgender youth, because I didn't know what was going on until I was informed, and the stories that I heard to me were shocking stories, and they educated me for like an hour. And you have to know this, and you don't put a label when it comes to human beings dying. You don't put a label when human beings, youth, are being killed. You don't put a label. You look at people, and you look at the heart of people and saying why we're not helping. And so that is the passion that I have, because when it's about people and the quality of life, about individuals for their safety, that is one of my number one concerns. And I want to make sure that I be the best voice that I can be for whoever elect me to be there. And so, and when you are in this position, you're going to deal with issues across the board, and you have to be able to challenge those particular issues to come with some type of solution. And hopefully when we meet with the persons in leadership, that we come up with a solution on how to handle the transgender youth, because I didn't know until I was educated about it. And so, and these are just some of, you know, of issues that, you know, that I have to deal with.
Well, I want to thank you very much. We've been talking with Wanda Adams, the Honorable Wanda Adams, City Council Member, District D. Thank you for coming on. I've enjoyed asking you the questions. Thank you very much. This is Queer Voices.
Have you renewed your membership to vote or run as a candidate in this year's local station board election? If you're running as a candidate, have you completed your nomination package? You have time. You have until midnight on June 30th to renew your membership with a $25 tax-deductible donation to KPFT, or you have until midnight June 30th to drop off your candidate nomination package at KPFT. Visit PacificaElection2010.org to find out more about KPFT's 2010 local station board election, or contact your local election supervisor, Kathy Kidd, at LES_KPFT@Pacifica.org, or call her at 281-668-8854.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, radio for people.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
A number of years ago, one of the community, I'd say crazies, Rainbow the Clown, started...
I would call him eccentric.
Eccentric,
crazy.
Yes. Well, I'm saying crazy in a nice way, because I'm also crazy.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am. You talked about, on one of the listservs, like, why don't we have a museum? Why aren't we saving stuff? And that sort of sparks something, which usually the listservers don't do, except sort of like
complain.
Complain. And out of that came the Gulf Coast Archival and Museum of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgendered History, known as GCAM. And Craig Farrell is here, who's now chair, the new chair, relatively new?
Relatively new.
Okay.
Yes.
How did you, first of all, get involved with GCAM?
Well, I'm a native of Houston, and I decided a couple of years ago that I wanted to give back. You know, you grow up in an area and you become involved with different things, but you never really give back to your own community. And so I was looking for ways to start volunteering. And
why GCAM? What was the hook that got you into GCAM?
Well, I had heard other organizations talking about their court systems that they have, and Judy Reeves, the curator of GCAM, was involved with a couple of the organizations, and so I started tagging along with her, and she encouraged me to participate, and one day she said, you really ought to look into helping us with GCAM, and I didn't really know what it was, and so I looked into it, and I thought, wow, this is not just the community's history, this one day is going to be my history, because you're a part of what goes on around you. And so I started participating with Judy, and as different positions would come up that you could fill, anything from secretary to the guy that goes and passes out tickets somewhere, I just started stepping into the roles, and, you know, 3 years and later, you're chairman.
And Judy wasn't, like, overly possessive to say, no, you can't do this. And I'm not just picking on Judy, because I have a lot of respect for the work Judy has done. But when there's sort of a change of power in an organization, there's always a little bit of a concern that, will it still run the way we'd like it to run, or the vision that we had?
Yeah. I think that Judy is obviously very dedicated to the mission of GCAM to preserve the history and to educate the people around. And she saw the passion that I was having volunteering and wanting to share and wanting to give back. And I think that she could see that my heart was in the right place. I, you know, obviously I make mistakes, but when your heart's in the right place and you're there to help the community and to preserve the history and to, you know, leave something, a footprint, so to speak, I think she could see that. And I think that that's what tuned her into me.
And the GCAM sort of came along at sort of the right time, in the sense that there were still people alive from when the sort of activism really started in Houston.
Right.
I mean, we did lose a lot of people, but there were still some people there, and of course we did lose a lot of stuff, but there was a lot of stuff still around.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's always amazed me with GCAM is that it began during that time when, as AIDS hit the height, families then didn't want to share what was going on in their personal lives. And we actually have people that you couldn't even say that they were dead, you know, because their family didn't want anyone to know that they
right.
were gay, didn't want anyone to know that
right.
their son or daughter was gay. And what happens to their stuff? And the TWIT is a perfect example of that. There are just bucoodles of obituaries in the TWIT that no one ever knew.
And that was so incredible when TWIT started doing that. And in fact, during the height of that period, the first thing we would do when we picked up a TWIT is look at the back first, and who did we lose this week?
I remember very clearly when I opened the TWIT and there were no obituaries in it for the
yes.
first time.
Yes, and they made a big deal about that, because
right.
that was incredible.
Because to me, TWIT for a long time was a bumper sticker. But I'm 49 years old, and I didn't really understand what TWIT was until after TWIT had basically hit its height.
Right.
But it was a bumper sticker, and it meant that the people driving the car were gay, and that's where
right.
it all came to life.
Yet when TWIT started, it was way ahead of the curve in the way it did the art, and the fact that it was a statewide publication, which very few things like that work, like Texas Observer, which is still around. I mean, Texas Monthly, which is still around. But TWIT played a very special thing, and back then it was like, it took a week for something for you to put something in and get it back out and for press, and that was like an incredible short time back then.
Right, and it also provided, I think, the link to build the community, because we weren't back in the 70s. You didn't just, you know, parade around with a flag and say, "Hey, I'm
exactly."
gay. But it gave you that way to communicate with people through the printed media.
I think that the other thing that the TWIT provides was a snapshot of that particular moment, that week, of everything that was going on, and in that way, a historical record. And I think that's why the GCAM collection is so important, because it has a collection of those twits, of those little snapshots of the obituaries, of the events, of the crazy ads from the 80s, 70s, 80s, and, you know, the 90s.
Right. We've actually been contacted in previous years with different areas that are looking for details of anything that happened in the news, and it's amazing what's actually in the TWIT that'll say, you know, this car was seen driving around the block, and it was a blue sedan with this license plate on it, and it'll be listed in something like the TWIT, you know.
Well, and I think the TWIT also provided a beacon for the people that were not in the big cities, and growing up in the small town, you would go and get the TWIT, and you would take it home, and you would read it, and it was like your little lifeline to the gay community. So it kind of allowed
people to be gay in their own way, I guess, out in the country.
You could have it laying on your coffee table and still you could have guests over and it wasn't offensive because it was a legitimate magazine.
As you've gone through some of these archives of the many, many memorabilia, and what's really wonderful is that there's GCAM stuff at the Gay and Lesbian Cultural Center, which is Montrose Council Center, first floor, which is just an incredible, incredible success. The fact that there's people there almost 7 days a week, and there's the stuff is up on the walls, which is great, and to be able to showcase that to the community. Was there some of the items that you've gone through, or Judy showed you, or that really captured your eyes? Or
you know, there's a couple of stories, but the one that's my particular favorite is we had several posters that were from the Names Project, and when we very first moved into the facility there on the first floor, we were putting some of these up, and I took some of them out of the frame to clean them. And there was this one Names Project poster that when I took it out and looked on the back, there was where these people had signed it and said, "In memory of our son." And when I looked closer at the name, it was the guy that was the assistant drum major to the high school I went to when I was drum major.
Wow.
And we never talked with each other about being gay. And I saw this man or this guy every day of my life for, you know, 15 years probably. And I stood there and I looked at that, and Judy said, "You know the McCalls?" And I said, "Yes, his father was the postmaster at the town that I grew up in." And it's those kind of stories that
absolutely
that just get lost, you know. We have another thing that I think is incredible to see how the media has changed. We have some of the original artwork that was from the first Pride logos that where the artists sketched the work,
yes,
versus it done digitally.
Yes,
I can't say that.
Yes,
word,
and, and that was really interesting. How in those days we used to have like these contests,
mm-hmm,
for people to submit this stuff, and some of it was like on a bar napkin,
right?
And some of it was done, and the technology. Well, and also as you were talking about, I mean, today Facebook is this thing where you can find people. Sometimes you don't want to be found, but back then you didn't do that.
No, back then you didn't do that.
And there's one famous story that I remember in the early days of the caucus, and Larry Bonnery was talking about this, that they went out and spent a ton of money to make the stationery. Back then it was known as GPC with the little red dot in the middle, the small letters GPC, sort of like NPR. And he put the names of all the board members on the left-hand side. And he was so proud of this, and they spent a lot of money to do it, and showed it to all the board members, and half them said, "You cannot put my name on there because I'm not out." These were leaders of the community. And that's how, that's those times.
That's the
people,
world we lived,
yes,
in back then.
Yes.
Yeah. People laugh because they'll say, you know, where do you get some of the stuff that GCAM saves? I say, well, some of it is donated. Families donate them, things like that. But we actually have dived in dumpsters to get, as people were passing away and the family was just throwing this stuff away, and we would go into the dumpsters and get it. And I remember diving in these dumpsters and I found shirts from when the BRB very first opened, and they had this logo on them and everything.
Hasn't it always been open? I don't know. It's always been there for me.
I'm older than you.
Oh, wow. I just always known it to be there. I don't remember.
Well, hasn't always been there, but
no, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
But these shirts, and so I brought some of them out and was wearing them, and people would see them, and it's odd where you'll be. You'll be, you know, in Cleveland, Texas, and you'll be in a grocery store with a shirt on that says the BRB, and someone will say, "Oh my gosh, I used to go there when, you know, when I lived in Houston, or when I did this or did that." It's really a much smaller community than we realize sometimes.
Absolutely.
You know?
So now during Pride, this is the fifth year or fourth year? Fifth year, I think.
Of the history tent.
The fifth year.
And that's an incredible thing, and I really got to give the person who started that idea of doing the original grant, it's Eric, and who, it was a great idea, and to work with GCAM and the Bots Collection to get that out there, because that really sort of brought the reason why we do Pride down home.
Right. This year they've moved the tent into a different area where more traffic will come through it, which I think is great. And I'm assured this year it's going to have more air conditioning than it had last year, which we'll see when we get there if that really happens. But GCAM this year is taking a little bit of a different approach. Instead of being so much of an exhibit this year in the tent, I think we're going to be more of an information source where we can show people some things, but yet give them the tools they need to find the information and then get back with them, versus trying to have a big exhibit and someone standing there telling you, well, this is the dress that Lady Victoria Lust wore, or this is, you know, the flag that used to hang at Pride. But it's exciting to see the tent actually be something that everyone will have to pass through, because then you have your chance to once again reach out and touch people and say, we really do have a history. It's not just a big, you know, festival that everybody comes to because it's a hot day in June. There's a purpose to the whole thing.
That's great. And how much stuff do you have? It must be just incredible.
We have 7 storage units that are absolutely floor to ceiling. You can't hardly squeeze in them. And then we just acquired another storage unit in the same facility that we're going to be able to put stuff in. I couldn't even give you a number of the things that we have, but I do know that we have enough to fill up the 4,000 square feet of the wall space on the first floor at the cultural center, and that's just a fraction of what's out there.
And then cataloging it, how is that all done?
Well, right now we're involved with the project with Houston Arch that we're working towards trying to receive a grant to where we can get it cataloged.
Professionally cataloged.
And what that will open up is the opportunity for people that are studying for degrees where they can get a hold of the history. Because it's one thing to have, you know, every issue or a copy of every issue of Twit that's ever printed. It's another thing to be able to find it.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's one thing to know that you've got the issue. It's another thing to know what's actually in each issue. So that kind of cataloging will help. I think that Houston Arch is going to provide that next step for the history being available to, especially the world of education. I mean, the people that are studying what makes a culture.
Well, and that's really incredible what Arch is doing, is sort of working with you in the Botts collection and then try to do oral history and digitalize the collections as much as possible.
Right.
So that it is available to, you know, doing studies and just people looking at some of these things.
Right. We have, I just was recently, I had a gentleman contact me that's interested in some of the different ashes and things that are spread at the back of Mary's. And, you know, again, it's in the pages of Twit, it's in the pages of The Voice, it's in all of those kind of things, and it's a matter of getting it out there where people can see it and use it to study or whatever they're doing.
Do you think the younger generation is interested in this history?
I think that they're interested in the history for the sake of knowing about history. I think it's a shame that our younger generation has no idea where we've come from. My partner is 25 years old and I'm 49, and today, looking at Outsmart, he said, oh, the village people, they're going to be at such and such. And I said, that's not the real village people. You know, they don't have an idea of what it was like to live through the AIDS epidemic, or they don't have an idea to know what it was like for Anita Bryant to come to Houston, what that meant to the whole gay community.
Well, if somebody's interested in getting involved in GCAM, how could they do that?
Well, volunteer, volunteer, volunteer. We have, it's gcam.org. You can go to the website. It's very easy to follow how to get a hold of the curator or the president or the secretary. You can do all of those kind of things to the website. There's also some limited pictures on the website. There's a list of a timeline of what we've been doing so they can see the kind of things that we do. That's the easiest way, because to give out phone numbers is...
Right. And, of course, they could join you on Pride Day.
Absolutely. They can join us at the tent. We'll be there and be glad to tell you everything we know about GCAM.
Great. Craig Farrell is with us, and he is the new chair of the GCAM, which is the archival museum of the community. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
1, 2, 3, 4.
was Clint, Michigan. The name of the song, Be My Man, and it's from the album Hawthorne to Hennepin, which was released on a private label in 2010. This is Queer Voices.
Well, this evening we have Lance Marshall with us, and we're going to talk about pets.
Yes.
And tell us, just go ahead and start talking. How are, you know, why is this so important to you?
Well, I mean, I just have a appreciation for animals. I love them. I always have, and I've got two dogs of my own, and I consider them children in a sense, and I spoil
those
them rotten.
Fur people, is that what you're
exactly,
saying?
Exactly, fur
okay.
babies, and I spoil them rotten, so I just sort of have taken on, you know, that goal out in Houston to try to make it better for animals in our city.
So,
and that's
you?
Been tough.
Very. Yeah, yeah, very, very tough. It's just because a lot of pet owners don't necessarily think sometimes when they have an animal that's unaltered, not spayed, not neutered, they don't realize the ramifications that can have on a community. You know, I mean, one cat, you know, having babies in her litter can spawn literally thousands of cats over, you know, a few years. And then you have that problem. Same with dogs. And so it's a matter of one of the most important things to HAPPI, which is the Homeless Animal Partnership Initiative, the nonprofit that my partner James Oxer and I started, was we wanted to really push spay and neuter and how important that is.
And is Houston different than some other large cities, or do they have the same problem?
No, they pretty much all have, especially in Texas. You know, I mean, we lived in New York for a while and they didn't have the type of problem that we have here in Texas, but no, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio all face the same problems that Houston faces.
Why is that?
It's, again, it goes back to, and like I said, it's not to be negative towards, you know, pet owners, because I love anybody who has a pet, but sometimes people don't think of how important it is to have your animal spayed to neuter, and they think, oh, okay, my cat got pregnant and she had kittens, no big deal. But it really is a big deal, because all the shelters in Houston right now are completely full of quote-unquote unwanted companion animals because of that type of thing. You know, there's feral cats roaming the street, there's feral dogs roaming neighborhoods, and they're out reproducing constantly, having more litters of more feral cats and more feral dogs in the community that end up in a shelter and ultimately being put down.
Now, I understood at one time, and I don't know where the funding came from, there was a program to capture feral cats and at SNAP.
Right.
Spay and neuter them and then release them again.
Right. And that is actually something that the city of Houston's Bureau of Animal Regulation and Care, BARC, that's something that they were tackling at one time or another, but things change there on a day-to-day basis, so I'm not really certain. Even though I'm there every week, I still don't know what the status of that program
Who's
is.
Who's the director now?
David Atencio.
Okay.
And at one time, BARC was doing basically the same thing SNAP was doing. If you were able to capture a feral cat, bring it into the facility, they would spay it, neuter it, and then take it back to the colony. That way the cat's still living its life, but it's not able to reproduce, which is the main problem.
So you're limiting the number of cats being born, dogs being born.
Well, that was what they were, not me personally, but that's what these organizations were trying to do with the trap, neuter, and release program. That's what they were trying to do, is to try to control that. But again, I mean, BARC, just BARC alone, that city, the city facility, I mean, it can get up to 100 intake of animals a day. Every single day, you know, and so they have where they're having to put down anywhere between, you know, on a month, anywhere, sometimes it can go up to as high as to 1,500 to 2,000 animals a month that they're having to put down, because there's just so many, and there's only so much, you know, you can do, you know, as a city. I mean, you can't house them all and things like that.
Now,
so
your organization.
HAPPI.
HAPPI. I like that. That's cool. Yeah,
we like
HAPPI. And what is it doing?
HAPPI originated because we went out to BARC one day and saw what was going on out there, and I went home and boohooed to James about, we got to do something. And of course, so we started volunteering at BARC, walking all the dogs, and we would go out every single weekend and we walked every single dog, and we've been doing that now for a year and a half, basically almost 2 years. But we wanted to start something, a new program that would directly affect the dogs and cats getting out of BARC. Because, I mean, going and walking them is it's great for the animals, but it's not helping them get out of the situation. So we created HAPPI, which is the nonprofit organization, and what the goal there is, several things: education, communicating with the public and giving them education on spaying neuter, promoting spaying neuter, and then holding adoption events for other rescues to come to where they can get their animals adopted. Because there's so many rescues in Houston, we didn't want to start another one. So what we started was an organization like, I'll use our Blue Line event. Every first Saturday at Blue Line Bike Lab, we have an adoption event every first Saturday. And we advertise for it. We put all the tents up. We bring all the refreshments. We cook out. All the rescues have to do is come with the animals. And then we allow them a venue to get the animals adopted out so they can then take more out of the shelters and foster them in their homes so they're not being put down. So basically what any organization in Houston needs with animals is more volunteers. We need people to step up. And if you don't have time to walk dogs or help with adoption events, then if you have room in your home to take a dog in or cat in and foster it and then take it to these adoption events, that way it's not going to get put down at Bark. And the other thing that Happy is doing, I'm trying to get this all out quickly, is we are going around to all the civic clubs and super neighborhoods. Either James or myself or one of our lead volunteers, which is Karen Durr, she works with us a lot. We go to all of these civic clubs and organizations and we speak about the importance of spay and neuter and tell these neighborhoods what they can do individually to help in their neighborhood cut down on the number of unwanted pets in the city of Houston so we don't have to keep spending our tax dollars money on basically putting animal down and putting it somewhere else, like stopping flooding or stopping crime or improving our streets or improving our schools for our kids. That money could go somewhere else.
Now, are there still these commercial organizations that sell pets? Is that part of the problem?
I'm not one of those people that rally against breeders. I think a reputable breeder is fine because I think there are people that want full blood miniature schnauzers or full blood shih tzus, and that's fine. No one should be denied that if you're a reputable breeder. And a reputable breeder manages the animals, takes care of the animals, and does it the right way. We have a problem in Houston of backyard breeders, people that are just breeding dogs left and right and then trying to sell them, you know. And that, I mean, they're not treating the animals humanely, and again, they're causing more animals to end up in shelter, because when the animals aren't getting sold, they're just dumping them on the street somewhere, and then they're getting picked up and wind up in shelters.
Now, the biggest problems, cats and dogs, are there other pets that are also problems with the overpopulation?
I wouldn't say as far as overpopulation. I mean, there's obviously lots of animal abuse and, you know, stuff like that that go on with other animals. But as far as being overpopulated, especially to the point where it's affecting your neighborhoods and things like that, are just dogs and cats, you know, just roaming the streets and things like that, because they're just, you know, like I said, they're feral and wild because they're being born on the streets. It's just dogs and cats.
What about, you mentioned some of the animal cruelty and, mm-hmm. and difficulty there. Do y'all ever deal with that at all, or is it strictly as you described?
Well, we personally, as Happy, we don't tackle that issue. We see it firsthand all the time, especially, you know, being major volunteers at Bark. You'll hear horror stories all the time of, especially, I mean, the Texas heat, how people just are mindless and will leave a pet in a car with the windows up while they go and shop for 30 to 45 minutes to an hour.
They leave their kids in there. It doesn't surprise you that they leave an animal.
Exactly. And people just, it's just, and like I said, I'm not trying to, you know, bash people or be negative against people. It's just a matter of not sometimes thinking about it because they're not immersed in that world like myself or other animal people. And but yeah, that you see a lot of animal cruelty, but like I said, our group does not focus on battling that. We don't have the legal grounds to go out and fight that type of situation. We just try to educate people on what they can and can't do and what they should and shouldn't do when it comes to animals.
As far as promoting spay and neutering, because I'm a big believer in that, you know, even though my sweet little fur people, I would love to have additional ones. The fact is that is vitally important.
Extremely.
How do y'all, as far as education is concerned, what all do you do?
Well, we have, at all of our adoption events, we have flyers and paperwork that we put out, hand out. We have what they're called gift bags. When you adopt a dog or a cat, you get food that people donate to us from, you know, local boutique animal food stores. But you get food and toys, and then there's information packets in there that talk about the importance of spay and neuter. But of course, if they're going through a rescue or the city of Houston Bark to adopt their animal, they have to be spayed or neutered. They don't have the choice. But we give education. And then the other thing is, like I said, when we go to and speak at the nonprofit organizations and civic club organizations and the super neighborhoods, we're speaking to them about the importance of spay and neuter. And you'd be surprised at how many people just don't think about it. You know, I mean, they
and
just
this
don't.
Goes across all economic
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's I mean, you know, it's just in general. People, like I said, they just, you know, I mean, I've had friends that see me posting things on Facebook about get your animal spayed and neutered, or this is important, or this is going on, and they don't have their dog spayed or neutered, and then I find out, and I'm like, do you not hear me every week? I mean, do you not see my posts? What are you doing? So it's a matter of just, and like I said, they don't mean anything harmful by it. It's just a matter of not always thinking about it, you know.
Well, and I'm a cat person.
Yeah.
And anybody that has a kitten and they go into heat the first time, mm-hmm. and the noise they make just almost drives you to go immediately, as quickly as you can, to snap or someone to get them spayed and neutered.
You would think, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know why
they have
don't.
Better bad hearing.
Either that,
I guess.
Or they just put the cat outside. I don't know. Let it go take care of itself. I don't know.
Now, if I don't want to, I want to get this in a couple of times. How do they get in touch with you if they want information?
Well, you can, the website for Happy is www.happyforpets.org. And that's HAPI, the number 4, pets.org, happyforpets.org.
And you mentioned Facebook. Are you all on Facebook? Or
absolutely. You can look us up on Facebook. You can, you know, there's Happy, and there's also a group called Weekends at Bark that we put a lot of information out there as well that's on Facebook that you can get information from. But on the Happy website, we have all of the ways you can volunteer with the City of Houston and what they're doing with Bark and things like that. You know, if they
What sort of volunteer opportunities are there?
Well, there's always the opportunity to go out and help with adoptions at the facility because Bark, like most city...
Where is that located?
It's at 3200 Carr Street, I believe is the exact address.
Okay.
And like most city departments, it's underfunded, you know, kind of. And so they don't have a lot of staff there, usually on the weekends especially. And so when people come out to adopt, there needs to be some volunteers to greet people, help them, walk them through the process, things like that. If you don't want to deal with the public but you want to be with the animals, you can always... pet the cats, clean out cat pens, walk dogs, help, you know, do situations like that. Or you can volunteer your time at adopting with off-site adoption events. For instance, Happy has several that you can adopt, you know, get involved with. And also Bark sometimes has them at like the Galleria or at a Sam's, you know, the Sam's locations and things like that. So there's plenty of opportunities. And then on top of that, there's literally hundreds basically of rescues I could get you involved with if you're interested in certain breeds or if you're interested in, you know, things like that. Like there's, you know, Shih Tzu, you know, rescue, and there's, you know, Pit Bull rescue, and there's, you know, Mini Schnauzer rescue. There's rescues for individual breeds, and then there's rescues that just take them all. And then the problem with rescues is they get overwhelmed with taking in the animals. They don't have enough hands to take care of them, so then they spend their wills taking care of the animals rather than trying to market them and get them home. So that's where Happy comes in with these adoption events, trying to be a support system under the rescues to help them get the dogs out and get more dogs and cats out and get more in there instead of in shelters. Does that
make sense? Before you go, I understand you're also involved in theater.
Yes, I'm an actor. I'm busy. I'm in a show right now called Bug. And it was written by one of the most talented playwrights, in my opinion. His name is Tracy Letts. He wrote Osage County, which he won a Tony for, and the Pulitzer Prize.
Speaking of the Tonys.
Yes.
They're coming up. The Gay Awards are coming up this Sunday.
I know. It's very exciting. I hear Glee. The cast of Glee is performing, which really gets me excited because I love that show.
Absolutely.
It's called Bug, and it's at Theater Southwest, which is right off of 59 on Fondren. It's in between Westheimer and Richmond, off a street called Clark Crest, off of Fondren. And it's a great script. I play Peter Evans, who is a paranoid schizophrenic with delusion problems, and he thinks that he's gone AWOL from a mental hospital that's being overseen by the Army, and he thinks the government has put actual aphids, bugs, inside of his body, and they're tracking him through it. So he goes through the play trying to carve these bugs out, and he kind of spirals out of control. It's an intense role, and I'm very proud of it, and I hope y'all can see it. It's running for the next two weekends on Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m.
And how can they get some more information?
If you go to theatersouthwest.org, you can reserve your tickets and get more information on it. And theater is spelled EATRE, not ER. You know, that tricky spelling. That's theatersouthwest.org.
That British spelling.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a great, fun show. And well, I guess fun's not the word.
I was going to say it didn't sound fun a moment ago.
Yeah, fun's not the right. It's entertaining and it's definitely art. And the cast, the whole cast, there's five actors in it total, just will blow your socks off, and the director did a fine job with putting it together. So it's actually a really entertaining show. So I really recommend, if you've got any interest in theater, to check it out.
Well, great. Yeah. Lance Marshall, thank you very much for joining
you.
Us.
Thank you.
And just one more time, the website for your organization?
It's happy4pets.org, H-A-P-I, the number 4, pets.org.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
And humor, honesty, and heart. Tune up the audiophile. A teen is sitting in a booth at a McDonald's while his father gets their food at the pickup window. That's how a new TV ad in France for the fast food giant begins. But to commentator Bill O'Reilly of the self-proclaimed Fair and Balanced Fox News Channel, McDonald's might as well have been selling burgers to terrorists.
The son answers his cell phone.
Hello. Moi aussi je pensais à toi.
Hello, I was thinking about you too. I'm looking at a class picture. I miss you too. My dad's coming. I have to hang up.
The father brings their food.
Here you go, he says.
Is this your class picture? You look just like me at your age. Let me tell you, I was quite the ladies' man. Too bad your class is all boys. You could get all the girls.
The son gives his father a sly smile.
The on-screen tagline? Come as you are.
So my question is, does that make you want to buy a Big Mac? Here now. Put things in perspective, Fox News anchor Jean. It's getting 2 at 11 in the morning on Happening Now.
I'm not a gay man, so I really couldn't answer that question.
You know, if gays are 10% of the population, that's what the estimate is. First of all, does that make you hungry to watch that? Because, you know, straight people are going to watch that, too. Is it, yeah, does it make you run out? You want some fries?
No, it's a little confusing, I think. You know, as one gay activist said, what does being gay have to do with eating a hamburger at McDonald's? Was there some sort of issue with discrimination at the counter, and they're trying to counteract that, as far as we can tell in our
research? So you're not hungry. No, I just want to talk about you, Jane Skinner. So you're not hungry after watching this, right?
Well, I'm always hungry for McDonald's, but that's a whole other topic.
All right, there you go. Thousand will love you.
Does it work, though? Is that what you're asking? Or why would they do it? I guess it doesn't work.
I don't know why they're doing it.
But I don't think there really is an answer. This is all we got from the brand director in France. This runs, we should say, only in France at this point. She said, we wanted to show society the way it is today without judging. There's obviously no problem with homosexuality in France today.
Okay.
That's their explanation.
Or in McDonald's or in the fast food world. All right, so look, they want to make a political statement selling burgers, they're entitled to it. It'll never run in the USA. They never do that.
Part of an overreaching campaign called Come As You Are, which you saw at the end there, so they show people of different walks of life. This happens to be their gay-friendly ad.
Do they have an Al-Qaeda ad? And, you know,
maybe that's
Come As You Are, and, you know.
And how do you know it's not coming to the States?
I don't know. I
never
know,
say never.
All is, no, that will not, I guarantee you, that will not run here.
A statement issued by Lisa Howards, McDonald's U.S.-based Director of Corporate Media Relations, failed to mention O'Reilly, but noted that each of our 117 markets around the world determine their own path on advertising and marketing. Other commercials in France's long-running Come As You Are series have featured flirtatious senior citizens chatting on laptops, and a clever young girl who turns her mother's scolding against her. A week after the gay teen and dad ad had been posted on YouTube, it had received more than 600,000 views. Reaction to O'Reilly's Gays and Terrorists link by U.S. LGBT advocacy groups was uncompromising. The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation wrote on its blog that the Fox News host had stooped to the lowest level and that his lighthearted tone was equally disturbing. Human Rights Campaign spokesman Michael Cole told the progressive online conservative watcher Media Matters that Bill O'Reilly should be ashamed for equating a family with a gay son to terrorists. It may be news to him, but most Americans know and love LGBT people and would be offended at this kind of comparison. And a statement by Rhea Carey of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force said that McDonald's France invites us to come as we really are. O'Reilly will be served a Big Mac and fries at any McDonald's in the world, but he can't stomach the welcome to gay patrons at the Golden Arches. Eat it, Bill. With thanks to Chris Wilson and Michael LeBeau, I'm Greg Gordon for This Way Out.
Walt Whitman, father of modern American literature, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Walt Whitman was born in 1819 in Long Island. Receiving only 5 years of schooling, he apprenticed himself as a printer. He recorded observations in notebooks, which evolved into the poems published in 1855 as Leaves of Grass. Because they lacked meter and rhyme and a number spoke of homosexual desire, the poems were considered scandalous. While in Washington, Whitman met Peter Doyle, who said, quote, "We were awful close together. The relationship would last for the rest of Whitman's life." Although he remained closeted, he gave voice to same-sex desire and inspired many in the modern gay rights movement. Whitman's persona was best described by a fellow poet in 1882, quote, "He is the grandest man I have ever seen, the simplest, most natural, and strongest character I have ever met in my life," said Oscar Wilde. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRAR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Mike Heinerman.
This is Augustine Burroughs, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine.
The three out artists featured on this edition of Audiophile have stories to tell and places to go.
Left behind is a lesbian in my head. I don't want to think about her in bed. Unless it's with a girl that is slippery, don't check. Left behind is a lesbian in my head. Unless it's with a girl, Patty Smith, and Joan Jett. Get behind is a lesbian in my head. Chrissy has bravado and it gives her class. Plus you always know that she could kick your ass. Boys don't want to get her and it makes her sneer. Every dyke that sees her gonna pray she's queer.
Diana DeJoya calls her band and her debut album Out Late. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. The album, Out Late, uses funny, sexy, smart, and irreverent lyrics to tell a particular story.
This is my story, the humorous take on my story. As someone who came out late, it's kind of like being late to the party. One piece of that is not wanting to pass. And another piece is going back to recapture earlier experience by rewriting it with a lesbian storyline.
Bring me back to 17, but bring me back queer. Give me some boy-cut blue jeans, some bicep, and no fear. My best friend and I were always in love, now we'll make it perfectly clear. I wanna go back to 17. I wanna go back queer.
You can find out about Diana DeJoya and her CD, Out Late, at www.myspace.com/outlatemusic.
Set the stage for the album Sleeping with Strangers by Richard Cortez. It's a dark look at his world with brutal honesty, sometimes realistic, sometimes just hopeful.
My latest record, Sleeping with Strangers, shows the darker side of my music and my writing. The record is lined with distorted cellos, electric guitars, violas, pianos. But mostly in the writing, I talk a lot about dealing with promiscuity, and really it's all about just discovering who I am as a sexual being living in the gay nightlife.
Sleeping with strangers, dreaming of you. The man that I live for, the man I never knew. I stumble through packed bars, looking for you. And just when I find him, turns out it's not you.
Find out about Sleeping with Strangers, the latest album by Richard Cortez, at www.wallenbergrecords.com. That's www.wollenbergrecords.com.
The latest album by Canadian Amy Campbell is a 2-CD set, and it tells a story. It's a journey in distance and in years and in the heart, called O Heart, O Highway.
This highway ends as highways always do. There's no denying that I'm passing by. The exit used to bring me home to you. It's just that I have never lost the love of nobody quite the same as you.
And we think the heart and the highway are woven together beautifully in this album.
O Heart, O Highway is a concept piece that tells a story. We start on disc one in chapter one, and we follow our hero through the sort of breakdown and questioning of the life that she knows through a book in the middle, which marks a turning point of realization and things that she needs to let go. And disc two, which includes the last part of the story, talks about the freedom and learning that comes from traveling and having new experiences and hopefully gaining a little wisdom by the end of it.
Love could never be the ground we stand on. Love has got to be the air we breathe. I know that I breathe easier. I feel
album is called O Heart, O Highway, and her website has a Canadian address. It's www.amycampbell.ca.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. Find out more about Audiophile or contact us by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trenton. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
I breathe easier when you're sleeping next to me. Poetry.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
You had another good show.
Well, Usually I don't talk too much about books because usually that's above my grade level.
But we just that's Joan's pretty.
Yeah, and Joan does such a great job on it. But we just got a copy of this book called From the Closet to the Courtroom, Five LGBT Rights Lawsuits That Have Changed Our Nation. And I'm sure Lawrence versus Texas, I know it's in there. I don't know if that's one of the five, but it looks like a fascinating book. It's by Carlos A. Ball. Publication date is June 15, 2010, so it will be out soon. But it looks like a really wonderful book. And we will probably try to set up an interview with the author. And if Joan's not able to do it, then maybe we could do it. Although
well, Glenn is so good at that.
So that's something that sounds really interesting.
A bit of a teaser. One of them's about family. Next one's harassment, discrimination, marriage, and sex. That's the five. But I'm not going to spend a lot of time telling you what's one of that. You can read the book.
And, of course, Outsmart and the Montrose Gym are both out with a lot of information about what's going on in Pride and the many events. Now, Pride itself does not really sort of publicize all the other events that happen, other events that they do not sponsor. But Outsmart and the Montrose Gym do a very good job in letting you know of the many different events that are happening. Some are fundraisers, some are meetings, some are just events. And, you know, Pride's a lot more than just the celebration. It's really about the history, about where we came from. And, you know, like one of the interviews we're going to be doing is about the Laramie Project, which is happening late June through July, which sounds the Theater New West, which is Joe Watts' organization.
You know, that's next week, 10:30. We'll have Joe on to talk about that.
And it's really nice layout about the Outsmart did just a fabulous job. It's their big issue every year about Pride. It's now the official Pride guide for the past couple of years. So there's a lot of good things. There's interviews with the Grand Marshals and just a lot of good events. And then they have some little write-ups about a lot of the volunteers, or some of the volunteers, I'm sure just a small collection of volunteers of Pride that help put on all the events, work that goes into putting on the parade and the festival, which happens at the end of the month. So that is, it's really worth picking up if you can. So all that stuff is happening.
Yeah, one little report. I went to Queer Bingo last Saturday afternoon. I thought it was a little strange. It starts at 4:30 in the afternoon, but you know, it was really great. We were finished up by 7, so you could go to dinner or go somewhere. It was One's a Meal. The second floor at One's a Meal is where it's held.
The 800 block of Westheimer.
Yeah, it's a great little venue for it. There were somewhere between 50 and 60 people there, so it was a good crowd. Everybody had a good time, and it was a good start to Queer Bingo. The next one will be July the 3rd, because it's on the first Saturday of each month.
Great. Well, finally, they got that back going after
I know. I loved
a
it before. Didn't have
absence.
Much of a theme, you know, where people weren't dressed in costume like I'd seen them in the past. But, you know, that doesn't matter. It was fun for everybody, and everybody had a good time.
Okay, so we've got shows coming up that's dealing with a lot about Pride this month and the events that are going on with Pride. We're trying to arrange an interview with the people from the Pride Committee, but having a little bit of trouble with that, so we'll work on that. And just keep you informed on what's going on. But like I said, probably the best source is Outsmart to look at the calendar there, and Montrose Gem is also putting out information that's what's going on in the community. And it's really important that you go out and see some of these events, because a lot of these organizations work really hard on putting on events for Pride, and sometimes the turnout isn't always as good as the people hope. So support the community so that people feel like it's worthwhile doing these events.
And remember the history behind Pride. You know, was Stonewall happened in June, and why we do it in June. We're one of the few cities that have the parade in the evening, where it's a little cooler down here. And it's about remembering our roots and why we do it. Even though now the parade and the activities are so much family-oriented. In the beginning, many of us didn't have families.
And if you had pledged during the fundraising time here on KPFT, I really hope you fulfill your pledge. If you need some more information, you go to pridehouston.org. And we certainly, not Pride Houston, I mean KPFT.org. Where did I just go there? KPFT.org, and there's a place that you can fulfill it. If you get a membership reminder in the mail, please do fill it out and place your check or put it on your credit card, because KPFT, it takes money to keep KPFT alive and going. Our expenses are rather high, keeping the transmitter going, especially in this heat. So while that's going on, of course, KPFT is celebrating its 40th anniversary, being on the air, and just their 40th anniversary being knocked off the air by the Klan. So it's an interesting time, and, you know, Stonewall celebration was 40 years last year, so...
Hey, Jack, we just got a phone call asking when Pride is, so remind us again of
Pride is the last Saturday, which is June 26th. The festival goes, I believe, from noon to, like, about 7, and the parade starts at 8:45 on Lower Westheimer, the 1700 block down to about the 400-500 block. You can't miss it. It's the largest parade outside the downtown area, and hopefully, with our new mayor, there should be a great, great turnout.
And I guess it's actually not too late to put an entry into the parade.
I think it might be, because tomorrow is the mandatory parade meeting, so it may be too late for this year. But you can call the Pride Committee. Go to pridehouston.org and double-check on that.
Yes, we want to thank our regular guest at the first Monday of each month, David Elliott from Washington. Want to thank him. Then I interviewed Council Member Wanda Adams, District D. We also had Craig Farrell, chairman of the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum, Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender History. And then we had Lance Marshall to talk about HAPPY, which is their nonprofit organization to help pets get adopted and little orphan pets. So if you have an interest in your fur people, do what you can and support their organization. We've had This Way Out, as well as News Wrap. And this is Queer Voices.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Falinski. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Falinski. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
This year, the Pacifica Foundation, the parent organization of this station, is holding elections to seat boards of directors in each of the foundation's 5 signal areas. These local station boards help shape the direction of this station. Your vote makes a difference. Please note the date of record that closes eligibility for voting is coming up June 30th. The date of record is the time when new members must be on the rolls for this election. If you qualify as a staff member, this supersedes the listener category of membership. Please make sure to log your volunteer hours in station-designated forms and ensure your contact information is on file. Those wishing to be eligible to vote in the upcoming election must meet the June 30th deadline. Tune into this station for more on this important board election or visit PacificaElections2010.org for details. This is KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.